Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. I have a weird regret about the day I moved to Dallas. I wish I had thought to drive around the city to all the places I regularly go with a video camera and record what everything used to look like. So many spaces that were once small buildings, houses, empty lots, and businesses are unrecognizable today. In many parts of town, populated by young professionals, new multi-story apartment buildings seem to spring up on the landscape overnight. They have changed neighborhoods, to be sure. But critics argue much of this new architecture is bland and uninspired, a wasted opportunity for creativity and good design. My guests have both gone on record with their disdain for what's being built these days. Mark Lamster is architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News and associate professor in practice at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Arlington. Eric Nicholson is staff writer at the Dallas Observer. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thanks Hello. For having me.
Is disdain too strong a word?
Sometimes. Sometimes. It is appropriate. And sometimes I think not. You just drive around, especially uptown, other areas, and you see just the amount of new construction and how conventional it is. And sometimes it's really bad. Some projects I really have distaste for, like the Alexan, which is this huge project on Goat Hill, which is right near where we are now at the foot of the toll road. That's a really gargantuan project that eats up a really important piece of Dallas landscape. And that's, I think, a really unpleasant project that deserves our disdain. But then there are others that are just more just run-of-the-mill bad that you wish would be better, that aren't really serving the city or the community well, but are less egregious, shall we say.
Eric, you first noted this in a satirical piece you wrote last fall for The Observer. Your point was that many of these buildings are like indistinguishable from everything else nearby, despite being marketed as like paragons of modern urban design.
Well, I'm glad you picked up on the satire, first of all, because not everyone did. But
let me interrupt you. Oh. Not everyone picked up on the fact that piece was satire?
No. If you read the comments, which I don't advise, but they're out there, you'll see that. And I also heard from some people who lived at some of the apartments that I referenced, who were advertising the piece as an endorsement of their apartments, without irony. However, it was satire. I think I come
in an era of Dallas Housewives of Dallas. We are in a post satire world.
That seems to be true. I come at this, I think, from a sort of a more accidental perspective than Mark. I mean, I had never given that much thought to sort of design or architecture or sort of like the built environment. My how I came to that piece is, you know, our office is at Maple and Oaklawn in one of the areas that's pretty rapidly gentrifying and that's, you know, home to a lot of these sort of new 4 or 5 story developments that, as I noted, look identical. And I walk around a lot and I'll take runs at lunch, and every direction I go, I see, you know, what looks like basically the same building over and over. And they're all, you know, they all have very slick marketing materials, and they're all sort of like, you know, luxury, and they all have these, you know, really highfalutin sounding names. And I just couldn't, you know, they all look the same. They all look the same. And I, you know, thought there was a funny way to point that out.
Is there an argument to be made, you know, for keeping them sort of beige and bland, because that way they won't look dated in 15 years?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, one of the most important architectural historians of the last century, Henry Russell Hitchcock, you know, would like to talk about two kinds of architecture: the architecture of genius and then the architecture of bureaucracy. So the architecture of genius would be the signature buildings for major public monuments and places, your museums, your city halls, et cetera, libraries, And then the architectural bureaucracy would be the rest of the city, where you didn't need showy architecture. You just needed contextual building that would fit in. So in a sense, we don't need every block to be a Calatrava adjacent to a Gehry, adjacent to a Zaha Hadid, which is obviously not going to happen now. Hmm. But the question is, will these date or not? I think what we're going to have is what we don't have is just a simple basic bureaucratic convention. We have what we've created is a sort of hacky convention of kind of a lowbrow mixed dog's breakfast kind of architecture. And I think it's going to date really, really badly in already. It's, you know, we can see it as a signature. And Dallas has some wonderful bureaucratic architecture. You can, you know, drive around the M streets, or, you know, I think that is a bureaucratic Dallas architecture, these sort of single family homes or other sections of the city. You can see there are archetypes of a Dallas building that we've developed and that are beautiful and wonderful and honest to this place. But I think these buildings are just cheap. There's a veneer of luxury, but the luxury is, say, you know, a quarter inch deep.
Yeah, my sense, and obviously I can't predict 20, 30 years out, but my sense is we'll look at these in that time period sort of like we look at sort of the garden apartments or something that are in Vickery Meadow or at Skillman and Aldelia, where just, you know, seas of just like, you know, apartment complexes without any character that are just sort of
seedy.
there and seedy. And I think with the density of which they're being built, especially, that's almost inevitable.
So we need to acknowledge here, and I know that you both recognize this, that, I mean, I think design is really important. On the other hand, this is kind of a luxury problem to have, right, to be complaining about the way these places look. But there's more to it than that. It's the way that these designs cause people to interact with the spaces that surround them, the way they behave on the sidewalks and the streets that are nearby.
Yeah, I don't think it's a luxury to have. I think how the city is going to develop for the people who live here is critically important, and it's not really just about aesthetics. It's about how we plan. It's how we decide what we're going to build, what our streets are going to look like. Do we build for the car? Do we build for the pedestrian? Many of these projects that we're talking about are essentially designed for people driving in, driving out, even though they're nominally – they have not very nominal, make nominal bows toward, you know, pedestrianism, but they're really not about that. So I think these are crucial to what the future fabric of the city is going to be. It was kind of interesting, a study published just this week out of Tufts University about how boring buildings can actually cause stress, and boring environments can cause stress for general population. Now, to me, it was a little bit of a push on a scientific study. I mean, I think living in a boring place makes people unhappy. That should be a statement of the obvious. So I think, you know, creating an urban environment that's a pleasant place to be, that's attractive, that encourages people to live in a healthy way and to communicate with each other is sort of the aim. And it's hard to do that when you're throwing up one crappy building after the next.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you can just feel it when you're in an architecturally interesting place and a not architecturally interesting place. And, you know, that sounds kind of elitist, but it makes people – it really, I think, affects people as they sort of move through the world and interact with the environment in ways they don't always realize. And I think the other thing that's important to remember is these buildings are going to be there for decades and decades. We're cementing the city, the shape of the city in place with these buildings.
Go ahead.
No, I completely agree, but I know there's the perception that it's an elitist idea, but it shouldn't be. I mean, how we live, it's very basic. It's, you know, food, water, jobs and how we live. That's every day of our lives are shaped by these spaces we're around. We should demand the most from them and not the least. And I think a lot of these spaces are about we end up with, you know, the most conventional, the easiest way out because we accept it as a population first and foremost.
Mark Lamster is architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News and associate professor at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Arlington. Eric Nicholson is a staff writer at the Dallas Observer. We're talking about new apartments being built in Dallas and perhaps in other parts of North Texas. We can talk about that in a minute. Back in 2 minutes with Eric Nicholson and Mark Lamster.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program, where students can customize their degree, like Lonnie Gentry, pursuing healthcare leadership and ethics. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour about good and bad residential architecture when it comes to multifamily units, the kinds of apartments that are going up all over town. We're speaking this hour with Eric Nicholson, a staff writer at the Dallas Observer, and Mark Lamster, architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News and an associate professor at UTA. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Eric, you have described the people who are living in these places as high-end renters. I'll confess that as a young journalist, I could never have been called a high-end renter, but I lived in decent places. However, you know, like a lot of people, I moved a lot in my early 20s, and I never expected to be in a place for more than a couple of years at a time. And I'll confess, you know, the design of the places that I lived was not top of mind. Is that part of the problem here, that renters who these units are designed for are not really don't really care so much about the design of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that it happens. I've been in that same position. I've only sort of recently started sort of looking around me and sort of caring consciously about these things. So I don't think it's something, I mean, the market speaks. People are filling up the apartments and so obviously they're satisfying a demand. So I think that where it comes in is sort of like culturally as a city and as a city government, that's where the city government and sort of planning needs to come in and, you know, promote good, smart, walkable development, hopefully architecturally interesting. And it has a lot of different levers to do that through zoning and through sort of, you know, the city tosses out economic incentives left and right. And so it has lots of levers to do that that don't necessarily require, you know, imposing arbitrary rules, but it can do it.
Mark, what do you think?
Well, obviously these things happen because there's a market for them. So it allows builders to go and developers to go to the lowest common denominator. Dallas is a city that's transient. We have a lot of young professionals coming here right out of college a few years out of college, graduate school, what have you. And they're looking for amenities that these projects provide them. They're surface amenities, you know. Then I don't even know if they use them all the time. You know, it'd be great if, you know, we had a movie room or a party room. You go on a tour of these places, I wonder how often these things actually get used. But I think the developers, you know, let's give them credit, they've figured out how to market to this audience. So that's an issue. On the other hand, I think that audience, there is a market for better design on the part of those individuals if, you know, we can present it to them, if they're given the opportunity. And I think we kind of enter this vicious cycle where you sort of build for the lowest common denominator. One project gets built, another project gets built, projects get built. The developers, you know, can go to the banks for it. The banks can, lend for it. We zone for them. We grant, you know, TIF money to these projects. We allow upzoning for them. So they're mistakes. And then architects are sort of complicit. They don't push back or they don't really – I mean, if you're an architect, you're basically at the whim of your clients. So they're kind of stuck doing what they're asked to do. And maybe they don't push back hard enough. Maybe they're not thinking as creatively about how they could use the same materials that cost the same. But, you know, the developer says, we want just another one of those, so make another one of those. You know, are there levers that we can do things about this? I mean, yeah. I think, you know, it'd be nice if the city would somehow incentivize better building projects.
Let me interrupt you. How do you do that without having – and I don't want to be disrespectful to people at the city by calling them bureaucrats, but how do you do that without having people who work at the city, you know, coming up with a list of features rather than, you know, really encouraging architects to use their creativity? How exactly do you write rules to demand better design?
Well, I don't think you want to legislate design per se. But I think there are things you can do. Say if you had a design review panel, and we do have some design review panels, and they encourage good work. And maybe you make it easier for builders to build who are, you know, you facilitate, you move, you know, a project that's been through that design review, you know, faster through the various, you know, gazillion bureaucratic machinations that are required on a project. There are various other things, you know, you could do to prioritize good design like that. And also a big part of it is, you know, promoting it and saying, look at this. This is what we want. And a good example, I think you can look in Bishop Arts where you said the community stood up and the community's representatives stood up. And you have two projects that I think are representative. You have one that – Alamo Manhattan's, you know, huge project, which basically the community sent back to the drawing board. What they got back isn't ideal, but it's better. There's another project there, the Nazarian project designed by Gensler. It's a really good project. You know, that's the kind of architecture we want. So it's not like it's not happening here at all. There are places where it's happening. It's just not happening enough.
Yeah, and I think Mark's right. I think sort of educating people, getting people to understand that This is something that's important, which feeds into sort of neighbors becoming involved in the process and really like pushing back on, you know, pushing for better design. I was talking with a law professor recently. I guess sort of in academia, I've never thought of it in this framework, but you have there's a spectrum of big cities, and on the one end you have cities that are captured by developers. Developers basically like get what they want. They run things. On the other end, you have cities that are sort of captured by like neighborhoods. So the neighbors rise up and they get what they want. And sort of every big city is somewhere along that spectrum. Like Dallas, I think, is very far toward the developer end. And so the projects that the developer says, hey, this is how I want to build the project, and then I think there's a mentality of okay, let's get that done as quickly as possible. And then I think you can add some resistance in there that sort of pushes back against that impulse to do things quickly and churn out these identical looking buildings. And in doing so, you can make things more interesting and livable.
I think that, you know, everything is going to start from community becoming involved. You know, the ground. On the ground. That's how it's happened in Oak Cliff. And I think that's how it will happen elsewhere. That's where it's happened, you know, in East Dallas and in other places in the city. And I think there's the issue with Uptown is that it's been a tabula rasa, right? Everything's knocked down. So there hasn't been the community there to gather, to come together. But, you know, hopefully that will start to change.
I was trying to tell my children the history of the State Thomas neighborhood, and there's very little evidence of what that neighborhood once was today. Whether you like the design down there or you dislike it, it just doesn't really reflect its history.
Right. I mean, that's the issue, is that so much of Dallas eats itself and destroys itself.
Mark, why do you think that's the case? Is there something different about this city than other relatively new cities in the western part of the United States?
I think Dallas has a unique culture of looking towards the future and ignoring the past that allows it to dispense with its past. It also has a city government that is rigged, basically, against democracy and against the people. Our weak mayor system makes it the bureaucracy of city government very opaque. And I think that is a major issue, but perhaps moving beyond the general scope of what we have to talk about here.
Eric Nicholson, you want to dive in after that?
The sort of story of Uptown is sort of the, I think, the worst example of this kind of thing. I mean, you had Freedman's Town, you had Little Mexico, which were, as you say, sort of wiped off the map and replaced with, you know, these high-end apartments. I think sort of as a political system, we're a little bit more responsive to some of the concerns that are part of sort of the Uptown story, in which you have disenfranchised populations who are just like shoved aside to make way for these things. I think they are more enfranchised now, those populations, but there's still not a lot of space, as Mark says, for that sort of community input.
Well, zoning here is for sale. I mean, Dallasites like to make fun of Houston because Houston has no zoning.
It's a free-for-all, yeah.
No zoning. But Dallas has something different, which might be worse, which is, you know, you pay for it, zoning. If you have a decent, you know, real estate lawyer, you can get a PD, right, a planned development, which is basically a zoning variance. And if you look at PD, I think 183, which is the Uptown area, there are something like in, you know, a square mile, there are something like, you know, 195, you know, zoning variances. So, you know, there's basically write your own code in some of these neighborhoods, really most of Dallas. And if you're a private citizen, how do you deal with that? You don't have time to deal with that kind of bureaucracy and fight it, or lawyers, and, you know, you got to be constantly on the ball. So it's a system that's sort of rigged for, you know, the business interests and against the general public.
That's Mark Lamster. He is architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News and associate professor in practice at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Public Affairs at UTA. Eric Nicholson is with us as well. He's a staff writer at the Dallas Observer. If you want to join our conversation, we do have lines open and we'll take calls after this break. The number is 800-933-5372. You can also email us at think@kera.org. We'll be back to our conversation in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can customize your master's degree to distinguish yourself in the workplace. You can apply now for summer. Deadline is May 1st. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Dallas Observer staff writer Eric Nicholson and Dallas Morning News architecture critic Mark Lamster. We're talking about new apartment complexes that are being built around the city, and both my guests feel that in many cases the design choices have been lacking. If you would like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372. Carol's on the line in McKinney. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I was just wondering if your guests remember that there was a time earlier when David Dillon wrote some articles about the overall architecture in Dallas and the suburbs. This was pertaining more to homes, I guess. But it sounds like a similar situation to what you're talking about now as far as being creative and that type thing. And also, why is it that Dallas seems to have such a hard time valuing their trees that are being cut down or taken out the way that they do in other cities, to where they try harder to keep them or replace them with a similar size tree?
Well,
this is Mark.
Yeah. I wasn't here when David Dillon was writing that those stories, but I, because I'm his successor, but I know about them, and I've gone back and I've looked at them and read some of them, and they're pretty funny. He, you know, was pretty good at excoriating the North Dallas special, the North Dallas McMansion, which is overbuilt, with its turrets and enormous number of rooms, and built, you know, cookie cutter one after another in its front lawns, and just develop, the huge amount of sprawl that we have here. And I think basically what we're talking about today is the urban equivalent of those properties.
Do you think properties like the ones we're talking about today shape the tastes of people who live there for a small number of years and then eventually may choose to buy a single family home somewhere? Does this shape the kind of design expectations that they have?
I'm sure it does in some way. I mean, I guess it accustoms them to a city or the place that they live looking bland and cookie cutter. So, I mean, I guess if anything, it might lower their expectations and sort of prevent them from recognizing the importance of good design.
I think it might heighten their interest in, you know, people. When you're a kid, you always react against what you have and want to do better, right? I mean, that's natural. So I don't think necessarily, you know, you just naturally want to reproduce that. I think the people who are moving into a downtown are probably looking for something else. However, and I think this is where it's interesting, you know, if you're coming from that kind of house, you've become used to the amenities in that kind of property, which is lots of big rooms and, you know, laundry facilities and, you know, your gym and in your room, you know, all of that, you know, the huge kitchen, you know, a bathroom with your master bathroom that has, you know, two sinks and enough, you know, counter space to land a 727 between them. You know, those features, amenities that you get, and also to be able to drive everywhere, right? That's part of, you know, what that culture created. So I think, you know, you're kind of expecting that when you know, if you're encultured into that.
Eric, you've mentioned
acculturated, I guess would be the correct word.
Eric, you've mentioned in your reporting that in the first half of last year, like 7,000 apartment units were built in the city of Dallas. I'm wondering what that emphasis on new buildings and everybody wanting to move into a new construction building does to the appetite for renovating or restoring or just using functional existing units in more historic buildings that may reflect different design sensibilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to the market. I mean, Mark was talking earlier about, you know, developers know what they can build and they know what the banks are gonna fund, and so they have this template that shows them, okay, this is how we can turn a profit. This is how we can make money. And I think that reproduces itself, especially in Dallas, with sort of a lack of pushback against that. And yeah, I think that probably does when it's easy to build that way, and when you can see that you can satisfy the demand this way, then you don't have to be creative about reusing old buildings or building more interesting things.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We have Elise on the line in Oak Cliff. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I actually live in North Oak Cliff and am part of the neighborhood association that has gone back to a lot of the developers and told them, we really don't want you to build that like that here. When you guys were talking about how it just takes neighbors getting involved, we have an excellent president of our neighborhood association who happens to be retired, and she takes a lot of time to study all of the design plans in detail and knows all the code. And she goes down and she tells the city when they've approved a plan
that doesn't match the code that we all voted on. So, yeah.
It sounds great. It's a lot of work for, you know, residents of neighborhoods to keep up with all of this.
Yes. I mean, that's yes. And there's just no way of getting around it that, you know, boots on the ground, paying attention to your neighborhood, getting involved is the way to fix things. Yeah. And I think, again, that's been the problem with these tabula rasa neighborhoods like Uptown, is that because there's been so much erasure, there isn't the community organization to be a watchdog.
There's nobody left to complain.
There you go.
And one thing that's, I think, important in Oak Cliff, and that sort of, I mean, takes some of the burden off the neighbors, is if the neighbors elect a city council person who is really looking out for these things and is listens to neighbors' concerns. Historically, Dallas' city council has not been, I think, the most responsive to actual residents rather than developers. I think that's sort of building on the city council, and it's really important to have these people because the city council members are the gatekeepers. They're the ones that developers go to and say, hey, I want to build this in your district. They're the ones who can really push back meaningfully on the developers. They have the leverage. So if you have a good city council member who listens to you, that's really important.
At what point does the desire to chase what seems cool and new in the moment cause a backlash? You know, there are certainly neighborhoods in different parts of town that were once the hot place to be and are now seen as, you know, very much reflecting the moment in which they were built, which is no longer considered, you know, the emblematic of good design.
I mean, I think that's almost inevitable if you because, I mean, like we were talking about before, what you realize that you can do easily and make a profit on, that's what you're going to keep doing and keep doing until, you know, the bubble bursts, and then you're going to be left with this mass of stuff just that's there. So, I mean, you have to have a mechanism in place that can, before the bubble inflates and bursts, that you have a check there.
I don't think you can be – I think you have – the nice thing about Dallas is that things are happening here. That's good. I mean, we're talking about the negative impacts of it, but it's good that we have change. Cities are about change. You don't want a city that just, you know, stops building and dies and becomes a museum of itself. Dallas is the opposite of that at the moment, and you kind of wish it would find this middle ground. But, you know, it's encouraging to see development and happening in some places. Gentrification is a dirty, dirty word, but there's also some positive aspects to that. It's about, you know, integrating neighborhoods, about building value, about bringing people to the city. The ideas of a progressive city often come with that kind of building. So, you know, we have to encourage the right kind of building and kind of promote the best kind of building and celebrate it when it happens, and try and do what we can to stop some of the weeds that are spreading over the city, because they do lasting harm and they don't go away. You know, architecture, it's not like some of the other arts, you know, like a movie or a song. You don't have to go hear a band that you don't like. If you don't like Justin Bieber, you know, you just don't go. But if you don't like an apartment complex, it's going to be there whether you like it or not.
Mark Lamster is architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News and associate professor in practice at the College of Architecture, Planning, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Arlington. Eric Nicholson is staff writer at the Dallas Observer. Guys, it's been a great conversation. I wish that we didn't have a shortened show today, because we could certainly go on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.